everyone, I'm Brian Conley of Hunters HD Gold, and you're listening to Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. This podcast takes a deep dive into what it takes to be a match director, manufacturer, sponsored shooter, or just an everyday shooter trying to win his or her first major. So sit back and enjoy this episode of Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. Welcome back to another episode of Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. Today, I'm sitting down with a guest that we've been trying to do this, I know, for 2 years. And it's just been, you know, the gentleman stays busy, never stops, and has all kinds of responsibilities that we'll get into that later. But Shane Coley, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I'm here. I'm happy. I'm present. Just excited to be shooting Nationals.
Man, we're here at Carrier Optics Nationals. This won't replay for a little bit later after Nationals, which is fine because I got a good book of people to listen to before we get to you. And if they don't like who I've interviewed previous, you can fast forward to this episode. But anyway, you know, I met you, I guess, pretty soon after I got into the shooting sports. Mm-hmm. Always very kind, always very, you know, always putting your hand out and just being just an all around, just good person, I believe, for the sport. And we'll get into that a little bit later as well. But where does that come from? When did you start shooting? Is this something you just picked up later? Or is this something you did with your father or parents a long time ago?
So I started in, well, really my whole life. My dad, my granddad, both avid gun owners, collectors, have spent their entire life around firearms, loading ammo, figuring out different crazy loads for hunting loads, revolver loads.
Well, what age was that? Because when you start talking about loads and reloading, you're telling me you're 12 years old or 7 years old pulling a press.
Well, I started pulling a press when I was like 8 or 9.
Really?
On a single stage.
Holy cow. So you were truly doing hunting loads at that point.
Yep. Because my dad's big into revolvers, has always been.
Okay.
Love 44 mags. Love to hunt with 44 mags.
Was it a Dirty Harry thing or just a Smith & Wesson thing?
Smith & Wesson.
My dad was a Smith & Wesson guy as well. That's why I asked that question.
Yep.
Very cool.
So just always been into guns.
Okay.
And my dad was a career law enforcement officer. And he found USPSA back in the 80s and did that as like a way to keep his marksmanship skills up. Because, mm-hmm. Department training is not always as good as it should be.
So he was a police officer in the 80s doing USPSA IPSC.
Yep.
Because he knew he needed the training.
Right.
That's pretty impressive. What do you remember how he found out about that, or how was he around when it got started? Was he one of the guys that helped get it started?
Well, he started in PPC.
Okay.
He did that for a very long time, was really good at it.
Okay.
And then I think at one of his range events for the PPC comps, that someone told him about USPSA, and we had a local club back where I'm from.
And that is?
Leland, Mississippi.
Mississippi. Keep going.
Down in the Delta.
Okay.
So he went out and tried one out, and it was more movement, more shooting. Wasn't just a stand and shoot, be super accurate kind of thing. So he fell in love with it, and he did it off and on for a long time. He'd go through his breaks just depending on his work schedule. And then obviously I was born in 1990, so that changed up a lot of stuff.
I'm getting too old for this shit. Continue. It just hit me. I was like going, okay.
Well, think of the young people in the sport now. They're born in 2000s.
I know.
That's crazy.
So I didn't mean to interrupt. It just
made
me just take a deep breath and realize, why am I here? No, just kidding. That's awesome.
But I kind of grew up with him doing that. And then when I was old enough to really safely, or what he felt like was safely, run around with the pistol, he started bringing me out to matches. And I started in production when I was, I think, 11 or 12 years old.
So you didn't start in Steel Challenge?
No. I didn't shoot Steel Challenge until 2012 for the first time.
So you started at the age of what again?
I believe I was 11.
11 or 12.
Yep.
With USPSA,
mm-hmm.
like one of the young guns running around. That's so cool.
Local matches only. I didn't go to my first state match, I guess my first major, until 2003.
Now, at 12, were you active in Mississippi, I would assume, baseball?
Okay. Yes, very big baseball player.
Southeast is real big in baseball, especially during those times. But was that your competitive release at that point, was baseball, or did you do other sports as well?
I played football for a little bit. Shooting kind of came in, you know, young teenage years.
Okay.
And me being young, it wasn't something that I loved it, but it wasn't like my true passion. Baseball was always my passion.
Right.
Played baseball my entire life.
What position?
Shortstop, second base, and third base in high school.
Oh, you were the fast one.
Tried to be.
Most of the shortstops, I remember, they were fast.
Tried to be. So as I was going through my teenage years, I played on an all-star or a select team, traveling team.
Oh,
okay. So I spent a lot of time on the road. And, you know, I prioritized that a lot over the shooting. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until later in my teenage years that I got more into shooting. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of when I realized that I've got a talent in this. This is something that, I don't want to say it was easy, but it was natural. Like the movement, being fast, being athletic, you know, navigating the stages, mm-hmm. a lot of that stuff just felt natural. So then I kind of realized that, hey, I've got a niche in this. I feel like this is something that I can, you know, I can really put a lot of effort into mm-hmm. and maybe see a future.
And what age was that again when you got to that point?
Probably 16 at this point.
Okay. Because the reason I asked that question, I've asked this question to somebody else that played baseball before. You played with a team
mm-hmm.
and you had to depend on others. Were you an only child?
I was. I have a half sister, but she's
okay.
much older.
Okay. So that's where I'm kind of going. So playing on a team was good, but being an only child at that point with a half sister, being by yourself to handle yourself with sports is a different feeling altogether.
It is. And, you know, growing up, I was always independent, you know, mm-hmm. basically my whole life, especially when I left for the Army at 18, I've been independent ever since. And a lot of that has to do with being, you know, being an only child, being raised that way. I was kind of, both my parents worked. So I would get myself to school. I would get myself home from school. Mm-hmm. I was responsible for taking care of the house while they were at work.
Right.
Dad was a big chore guy. So I had to do tons of chores and clean up the house. And
that's where the, that's where the discipline comes from.
Yeah. And that's stuff a lot of kids, a lot of people have had to do.
Yeah.
I feel like it built a level of independence.
So at 16, you're driving.
I was.
So you're driving yourself to these matches.
Some of them.
Was dad going with you?
A lot of the local matches, he would still attend with me. A lot of the training sessions I was doing on my own back then. Because he was, at that point, he was the assistant chief of Leland. He was working. I mean, he was pretty, his days were pretty long.
Right.
So I'd get home from school and we had a range right around the corner from the house mm-hmm. That I had access to. So I'd drive myself out there and train.
Who do you train with?
Myself.
Okay. Did you watch any kind of videos or how did you find out what you were practicing?
Well, back then was kind of the beginning of YouTube. So Saul Kirsch had his little YouTube channel that he'd go out and film a lot of the matches and make the DVDs and the movies.
Yeah.
And I kind of modeled a lot of my shooting back then off of Max Michelle and Chris Tilley.
Nice.
I loved the way Max shot and I loved the way Chris moved. Chris was always super aggressive, loved to shoot on the move, loved to blend positions. And then Max's shooting style was always very interesting to me because he doesn't ever look like he's moving fast, but he is moving fast. His shooting is always super aggressive, mm-hmm. always really fast. He always attacks his targets.
There's no wasted movements with Max.
I tried, you know, back in the early days of YouTube, I watched a lot of the Saul Kirsch videos that he had of Max and Chris and mm-hmm. the Nationals videos that he would make. And I would go to the range and try to model a lot of that stuff. You know, I'd try to set up drills where I would have to shoot on the move or I'd have to blend a position, but then I would want to attack the targets like I would see Max do. So then I kind of molded my own shooting style out of that. And that's kind of where we are now.
So at 16, you started molding your own shooting styles watching YouTube, which is really, really cool. I learned how to reload off YouTube. So
The famous Travis Tomasi video.
To each their own.
Yeah.
No, I meant reload as in bullets when I was doing hunting myself. No, not that. I didn't know about that till I got into shooting sports.
I was
like, you ever seen this? I was like, well, that's some voodoo stuff over there. That ain't right.
Oh, yeah. That video is still famous.
I know it is. We talked about that on his podcast, as a matter of fact. But, you know, how did you had the shot timer
mm-hmm.
and everything else. And at 16, there's cars, there's independence, there's women, there's high school, but you chose to stay focused with shooting.
I did.
Okay. At what point did you go to your first big match after that? When did you put time and energy? Did your dad or did you find somebody to go shoot with? Or what did that, you know, when do you take the next step to stop training and go execute?
Well, the first major I shot was Mississippi Classic 2003.
Okay.
And that was like my first experience with like a sectional state level competition. I didn't do that well. It was a very good experience. I learned a lot.
All right.
2004, I shot a couple of other state level matches.
And how old were you again?
13, 14 then.
Okay.
And then one of the deals that me and my dad worked out was I had to shoot production until I made master. Okay. And then he would let me shoot open because I always wanted to shoot open. Everybody shot open. Everyone was fast shooting open. Yep. Max and Chris shot open.
Yep.
So that was what I wanted to do. So that was kind of our deal. So I made master in production and got my first open gun. And that was 2007. I shot my first season in open was 2007.
Okay.
And 2007 was also the first time I won a major, what I would classify as a major, which was the Arkansas section.
Wow.
And I'll never forget. Obviously, I was super happy, very excited. I'd won my first, you know, sectional match, major championship.
Right.
And we were leaving the range and my dad was driving, was in the back seat. And he looked back at me and he said, well, how do you feel? I was like, man, that was really awesome. Like, that was just a really cool experience. And he kind of looked at me and was like, don't ever forget it.
I like that.
And ever since then, that moment sticks with me even to this day because that, like that first initial excitement of winning.
Yes.
That was a feeling, a moment, an experience that I never wanted to not experience again. Mm-hmm. And from there, I was like, this is what I want to do.
I have told that to people that I've managed in the sales process and they got their first sale.
Mm-hmm.
That was substantial. That was a game changer for them in their mind. I said,
right.
That's your moment that you have to build on because you're going to be told no 30 times to that one time.
Right.
That's just, hopefully winning's not like that in shooting. But, you know, to be told that by your dad and you still use that today, that's cool.
Yep.
That is so cool.
He was very, very, cool. Very influential on me in my younger years and still very much is. He's kind of my, when I'm not doing well or I'm frustrated or things just aren't clicking, he's like my voice of reason. He's kind of my outlet. I vent to him a lot.
Okay. So venting. Yes. I didn't know if he was giving you like still words of wisdom or is he just kind of listening?
He does both. He does both. I mean, he's really good at, he knows, obviously he's my dad, so he knows me really well.
Right.
People
don't like listening to their parents. That's a normal thing. And as a kid, it's really, really hard. And as an adult, I go back when my dad was around, I'd still talk to him about things. But as a kid, were you doing that as a kid as much?
Not as much then.
Okay. So I'm making sure you're not just an abnormal anomaly.
There were obviously things that I knew that I would listen to him on.
Okay.
But as a kid, you know, he still is my dad and just kind of in that rebellious moment,
of course.
Rebellious mind.
So what makes life fun.
Exactly. Not so much for him.
Exactly.
But now he knows he can kind of base off the conversation that I'm having. He knows when I just want to vent.
Right.
And he knows when I'm looking for advice.
That's
and he's
cool.
Really good at navigating both.
Mm-hmm.
So there's days where he'll just listen and he'll, have you tried this?
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of like talk to me and just let me find my way to the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other days where he gives me legitimate advice on,
right.
But he's always very honest with it. It's either, hey, you're screwed up and you're being lazy or, mm-hmm. You're just doing dumb stuff
mm-hmm.
or this is the avenue that I think you should pursue. And maybe here's the results you're going to find.
So he gives you like a multiple choice
yes.
way to go.
But he always, a lot of the times he tries to get me to find the answer or he knows that I already know the answer and I just need to admit it to myself.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
So you're shooting well, you're training yourself at 16 and 17 going through this process. And you made a comment, you went to the Army at 18.
Mm-hmm.
Was that based on what your family done in the past? You wanted to follow in their footsteps? Or was this an option of like, didn't really know what else you wanted to do? Because there's two people that usually go into the military. One, it's a generational thing. Well, there's more than that. But two, I don't know what the hell I want to do. And they may pay for college. Or three, it's just like, well, I ain't gonna what choices. I'm going to military. So you hear all stories of people that got into it. And you're too young to be drafted. So what was your motivation behind going into the Army?
It was a twofold thing for me. For one, the AMU, the Army Marksmanship Unit.
Okay.
So at 16,
so you were kind of recruited then.
Yes.
Okay.
And at 16, I'd gone to a Max and Travis class. I'd met with them, talked to them, expressed my interest. I think the AMU would be an awesome opportunity.
Okay.
And then I was a little too young for them to really entertain it. So it was more of a, stay in contact, talk to me at matches.
But how they find you? Because normally they do a lot with the Scholastic Action Shooting Program.
Well, back then, I don't know if this was almost 20 years ago. So
yeah.
I don't know if Scholastic stuff was really around then.
That's true. That may not have been. So you were at a match and somebody saw you from Texas or somebody, or not Texas, but from the unit or just other shooters were watching you.
Well, Max and Travis were still in then.
Max and Travis were watching.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And I took one of their classes because they used to have double impact training back mm-hmm. in the day. And I went, it was in, I think, Thibodaux, Louisiana. Okay. So I went to one of their courses and kind of expressed the interest and talked with them then. Mm-hmm. And then from there, it was, that was kind of like the path I wanted to take.
You're watching videos of this guy getting better. And all of a sudden, him and Travis notice you. Mm-hmm. Do you remember how that made you feel?
Of course. Of course. I mean, I'm looking at Max as a national champion, multi-time national champion.
Right.
And then it gets to a point where I'm shooting in his squad with him, and him and I are like discussing stage plans. And at this point, I'm still a young nobody.
Yeah.
But yes, I do remember that feeling.
Holy cow. See, I may have forgot. I just didn't remember that you did that in you. So that's so cool.
Yep.
So you're recruited, go in the military. You got to go through basic training.
I do.
Was you ready for that?
Yes and no. Yes and no.
So no facial hair then.
No facial hair then. That was pre-facial hair.
Did you have longer hair being from Mississippi?
Actually, I did have long hair up until my senior year of high school. Okay. I shaved it for baseball.
Did you really?
So I was prepared in that regard.
It's an Alabama Mississippi thing. It's just I can relate. I'm from Alabama, so we're next door.
Growing up. I had a mullet.
That's awesome.
I had a mullet.
Hopefully, you have to post pictures sometime. I've got pictures of me on my senior picture. I'll show you offline. Oh, if you email me, I'll send it to you. There's some good stuff.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Yeah. I had long hair. I think my senior prom pictures, I still had long. It was before I had shaved it. And it's, I mean, just a mop.
Oh, did you make your mom proud with that? Is she all about it or is she against it?
I don't remember.
Okay. Was your mom involved a lot with your shooting?
She traveled with us a lot.
Oh, nice.
Okay. She helped. She just wanted to see me happy.
Okay.
She wasn't really into the shooting. She didn't get into it until much later. And she only shot for a couple of years.
She shot too?
For a couple of years, she did.
Okay.
Her and dad would travel to matches and she would compete.
Wow.
But she just wanted to see me happy. Whether it was baseball, whether it was shooting, whatever it was, that's all she wanted to do was see me be happy and be successful.
Okay. Very cool. Let's take a quick break. And I want to get into the military part again.
Okay.
Because I got some questions about that because I haven't had anybody from AMU on before. So now I can get some history.
Yeah.
And we'll take a quick break and come right back to it. This week's podcast is brought to you by Kona Gold. Kona Gold is a premier lifestyle brand for those who work hard and play harder. There are many hemp companies out there that get lost in the crowd, but Kona Gold sets the gold standard with its premier line of products. When traveling all around with a Magical Mystery Tour to different matches, I travel around with lots of different flavors, including pink grapefruit, candy apple, and vanilla cherry. Make sure to stop by and get some for yourself. They are all zero calories, zero sugar, use organic hemp, and are THC and CBD free. Competitive shooters love them because there's no shakes, no headaches, and no crash. When you order from KonaGoldHemp.com, make sure to use discount code HUNTERSHD for another 20% off. So when Max and Travis are recruiting, and at some point you make that decision to go with the AMU, is that... The parents were okay with that and everything was good there? Were they supporting that or they want you to go to college? What did that look like at that point?
Both.
Okay.
Both. My dad was, so I always knew kind of growing up that I wanted to do like military, law enforcement, some style of like service, protect, duty to country kind of thing. It was always, I mean, my dad was law enforcement, so that's what I grew up with. Mm-hmm. So I always knew that one of those paths was probably a path that I would want to pursue. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as joining the military, my mom was not a super huge fan of it, but she also knew why I wanted to do it.
Okay.
So she was, I mean, very sad because, you know, I graduated high school like May 10th and then I was shipping to basic like May 20th.
Oh, not much time to say goodbye.
No. So that, I mean, literally she watches me finish high school and then I'm now leaving for the military where I'm not coming back home. Like I am gone.
Right.
I'm gone away from home.
Right.
So that was a very bittersweet day. I mean, it was exciting for me because I was embarking on a new adventure. I was leaving home for the first time. But also I didn't really know what I was getting into. And then I showed up at Fort Benning and chaos.
Oh, please.
Just massive chaos.
This is why I do the show.
Oh man.
This is why I do the show.
Yeah.
So you'd already shaved part of your head.
Yeah.
They went for the rest of it.
Oh, they did. So you go to, for infantry guys to go through OSUT, which is, I think it stands one-stop unit training.
All right.
So basically basic training and AIT or advanced individual training are all put into one, you know, one training session.
Right.
So I show up to what's called 30th AG, which is like, I guess like your holdover intermittent place before you go out to like an actual basic training unit.
Okay.
It's like, you get all your equipment there, your, uniforms, your boots, mm-hmm. your PCs. So we show up there and this is, you know, we drove from Mississippi all the way to Georgia and I'm in a van with like six other people.
Ugh.
Don't know any of them. We stay in a hotel, down in Jackson and I booked roomed with this guy that I've never met before.
And you're a single kid, which is makes yes. it even better.
So I'm just like,
continue. I see this is going great.
I'm just like, and I'm a quiet person. Normally I'm very outgoing, but I like right. to, when I meet people, I like to sit back and just listen
yes.
and kind of observe people. So I'm watching all these kids and, you know, some of them look like knuckleheads. Some of them mm-hmm. look like, you know,
the reasons we talked about before.
Yes. Some of them look like they have potential. So I'm just like, well, I'm just going to kind of keep to myself and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And then we get to Fort Benning. We kind of start getting checked into the unit and people are just yelling and drill sergeants are screaming. And this isn't like the beginning of basic training yet. This is like, we just showed up.
They're setting the tone.
So early. We're all in like this giant room. And they come in, like kick doors open and start screaming at everybody. And none of us know what parade rest is. None of us know what attention is. You know, when NCOs enter a room, you have whatever saying they tell you to say. We didn't know any of this stuff. So they would enter a room and then get mad at us for, you know, some stuff that we didn't even know what to do. And I'm just like looking around at this group of people like, what is happening here?
Because you came from a single
yeah.
family that your parents are very reasonable. They don't usually, I can guess there's not a lot of arguments in a household.
There was.
Oh, okay. Well, okay, good. I didn't know. Because usually you can, when you have a single kid, because I've got one, it's 21 now, I can communicate. I don't have to blow up and throw things. So the other kid watches, says, you're learning from him, so don't do what he does.
Well, for reference, in that regard, my dad was a hothead.
Okay.
And I was an extreme knucklehead.
Okay. Well, based on the knucklehead part, I can relate with it because I was too.
Yep.
So I get that.
I like to do everything he told me not to do
yeah.
and then try to be sneaky about it.
Well, that's even better. So yeah. you're going in there. So people yelling is not an off-color thing to you then?
To me, it was funny.
Okay.
Which was also not good. As long as it wasn't at me.
So was your nickname Joker?
No.
Just making sure.
But it was, so we get all our stuff and 30th AG, you start learning like some, I guess, foundational
okay.
things.
Okay.
You start learning like what to do really, like how to be in the military, how okay. to, like saluting certain officers, the sergeant major walks in, what do I do? NCO walks in, what do I do? How okay. do I stand? I'm talking to a staff sergeant, a standard parade rest, saluting, you know, officers and stuff when they yeah. enter the building or not enter the building, but, you know, in passing and things. So mm-hmm. you just learned, a lot of things about the military.
Right.
And, well, then we finally get through all of that and we're getting sent to our actual basic training unit.
I can see the grin on your face.
And I remember, this, you know, they called it like the private news network, the okay. PNN.
Yeah.
That's what the drill sergeants called it. And, you know, you hear rumors from all these privates that have been, they go to a basic training cycle and something happens to them. They get hurt. They do something dumb. So they get recycled. They get sent back to 30th AG and these kids just talk to all the new guys. And, oh man, I heard about this or this is what happened to me.
You think they're plants?
I don't know, man. So I've heard so much about what's going to happen to us. And we all get in formation. We're standing out in this field, waiting on a bus to come pick us up. And we've just got drill sergeants like walking around us and no one says a word. I'm just sitting there, just looking around. I'm like, this doesn't seem fun anymore. Like
that
I know
that
this
quick
is about to go south
that quick.
So then bus shows up. They're very like calmly, you know, get on the bus, everybody line in or load up, duffel bag goes in your lap and no one say a word. Okay. So we all get on the bus, duffel bags, we're all just sitting there. And then this other drill sergeant gets on the bus. And I'll never forget his name, Drill Sergeant Guadalajara. And he says, everybody put your heads down, close your eyes. Okay. So we all do that. And the bus just drives us around Fort Benning. We're like around the corner from where our actual unit is.
Your head's supposed to be down with your eyes closed.
Well, I figured this out later.
Okay, continue.
So they drove us around for like 20 minutes. And none of us know what we're doing. So we're yeah. just sitting there and one kid will pop his head up, put your freaking head down.
And freaking was not used.
Yes. More explicit language. Yes,
of course.
We finally come to a stop and drill sergeant Guadalajara is like, everybody look up, look off to your right. So we all look over and it's this big, like PT field with sand pit, you know, okay. pull up bars, ropes, and you see like, your barracks and stuff. And, he's like, privates, off to your right, you will find your home for the next 16 weeks. Now everybody get off the freaking bus and just all hell breaks loose. Oh,
that's awesome.
So now you've got 60 kids stuffed into this bus, mass panic, trying to get off.
Not to be the last one.
No. And I was kind of towards the front. So I make it off and kids would drop their duffel bags. So then a drill sergeant would pick up the duffel bag and throw all the stuff all over the PT field.
Oh.
So you're running through this. They've got smoke grenades going off. They got flashbangs or the sim flashbangs going off. Just mass. Chaos. People are screaming. Kids are falling down. Kids are getting stepped on. And they're just like, run this way. So I've got my bag. And
have you already talked bad about Max Rochelle through this process?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. There are a couple of moments where I'm like, what am I doing here?
That's wonderful.
So then we get in formation and they're doing like roster check-in, putting us in our platoons.
Right.
And as we got into our platoons, we had to do a layout with our duffel bags, make sure we had all our stuff. Well, there was, if you remember, the kids that had their stuff thrown all over the PT field.
Yeah.
So kids show up with an empty duffel bag for their layouts, and drill sergeant's like, where's all your stuff? Oh, I don't know, drill sergeant. It got tossed out in the field. We'll go freaking find it. So this kid runs off, and I'm sitting there in formation like, do not let go of my stuff. Noted.
That is your property.
Noted. Do not let go of this. But that was like the entrance to it all.
Yeah.
And I mean, from there, it was fun.
When you started going through basic training, did any of the drill sergeants know what you were there for?
By week three or four, they did.
Was that an advantage is not the right word because they don't show favoritism. I have heard that before, but it was. You had an advantage. Okay. If we have to edit this out later, I get it. So just that was cool. So
I'll keep names out of it, but no, it was actually a cool experience.
So something changed as far as when they knew you were there, you were recruited for a certain thing.
Yes.
Did they give you any nicknames back then?
No. And I won't say advantage as like I was treated differently.
Well, but
what happened was by week three, because when I came into basic training, I already had orders to the Army Marksmanship Unit.
Okay.
Where most of the other kids, they don't get their orders until week maybe six or seven. Right. Everybody kind of gets told where they're going to go. Mm-hmm. So I already had orders and they figured that out.
Well, I didn't know if Max or Travis had called him and said, this is my guy, really rough him up or anything. So I didn't know.
No. But they figured it out. And I think at the end of week three or week four, we had our rifle marksmanship qualification. Mm-hmm. And I'd shot a perfect score and another guy that was also going to the AMU was in another platoon had also shot a perfect score.
All right.
So they knew that both of us were going. So they decided to have me and him do a shoot off.
Oh,
well, he was a, international pistol shooter and I was an action pistol shooter. So the shoot off was
the difference.
Well, they're the stand and shoot.
Oh, it's those trophies, the trophy people we see back on the old trophies.
Yes.
Got it. Continue.
It was more of a, somewhat of like a three gun ish style stage. Mm-hmm. It was like, post up on this barricade, shoot multiple shots on this target till it goes down, then run to this barricade. Same thing. It was a KD range, so anywhere from 50 out to 300 yards. And then we'd go back and forth to barricades.
What gun they hand you?
Just M4.
M4? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But it was something that was very advantageous to me, so I won the competition overall.
Nice.
So then we get back to the barracks.
What'd you get?
I got an award when I graduated.
Okay.
Or I think maybe just a certificate or something.
Oh, no, I didn't know if it's something different. I didn't know.
But
like Survivor, where you get something different compared to everybody else.
But we get back to the barracks and my senior drill sergeant, we're all kind of at our bunks, like I think making our beds or doing, organizing our wall lockers or something. And he comes out and just yells, Coley. I'm like, damn it. I didn't do anything. Why am I getting called? So I run over to him.
Because it wasn't that calm when he called you, I'm sure.
No, I mean, he comes out and screams it at us. So I run up and post up, get parade rest in front of the door. He calls me in his office, shuts the door. He sits down, takes his drill sergeant hat off. Check it out, man. I know where you're going. So you're a pretty good shooter. I was like, Roger, drill sergeant, I am. And he's like, here's what we're going to do. I like guns too. I like to trade and sell guns. So I'm going to call you in here every once in a while. I'll give you a Coke. I'll give you a snack. You give me advice if you need to call somebody. Because I told him my dad was really into him and he was a lot more knowledgeable than I was.
Yeah.
He's like, if you need to use my cell phone to call your dad, if I'm making a trade deal, I'll let you do that. You say a freaking word about this to anybody and I will end your life. And I was like, Roger Thatcher's heart.
No.
Swear to God.
That is wonderful.
So like every 2 or 3 weeks, he'd call me in. I'd drink a Coke, have like a Snickers. Him and I would talk for 20, 30 minutes.
Just about guns. Yeah. That's so cool.
And he's like, hey, I've got this gun here. I'm thinking about trading it for this or selling it for this. Do you think it's a good deal? Let me call my dad. So I called dad and I would give the phone to him. He wouldn't let me just like, hey, dad, how's Sunday going? You know? Exactly. So it was very purposeful calls.
Yeah.
But yeah, he never treated me different in front of the guys.
Right.
And going out back out to the, and to the bay.
You could not show that it was any different either. So you had to work harder.
Well,
you had to push yourself more.
Every time
nobody got an inkling of it.
Yeah. And every time I left the office, he would always like sling the door open and like I would run out with him screaming at me. So it looked kind of legit.
This is wonderful.
But yeah, him and I kept in touch for a long time after I graduated.
That's so cool.
And he's still in right now. He's still doing really well.
That's awesome.
But yeah, he was a really cool dude.
That's cool. You know, you stayed there how long? 4 years?
No, I was 6, 7 years.
Almost 7 years.
Yep.
Wow. So I get, that's right, because you stayed with him while you were shooting on AMU. So that's part of it. So how long was the initial signage for when you signed?
My initial contract was, I think, 3.5 years.
So 3.5 years.
And I reenlisted after 2, I believe.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong, but when you're in the AMU, you're expected to do one thing, win.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty like, there's people waiting for you to not win.
Mm-hmm.
How did you handle that pressure, knowing that every match you went to, you had no other choice but to win? Was that a mental burden, or was it a challenge? How did you handle knowing that there's this guy that I know that wants my spot if I don't win? How do you handle that?
I don't know if it's as much how much I handle it, but it's also, I mean, it goes into consideration with the leadership that I had too.
Okay.
Obviously the pressure is there. So it was kind of up to me with what I do with it. Okay. You know, I can either handle the pressure and make it beneficial for me, or I can take the pressure and fold under it. Mm-hmm. But I also had good leadership when I was there that, was a very good guide for me. Mm-hmm. I worked with Daniel Horner for my entire time I was there.
Wow.
Daniel, obviously a very, very winning three gunner, and sniper competition.
Yeah. One of the best.
Very strong mental game, very fundamentally sound when it comes to shooting, very, very intelligent. And me and Dan didn't always get along. We butted heads a lot.
Right.
But Dan guided me a lot. And he showed me what it was like to win. And how to handle a lot of the pressure and things that come along with it.
Mm-hmm.
That helped a lot. And as far as me handling it, it wasn't that I didn't feel the pressure, but it was kind of like a make or break thing. Either I do this or I don't. And if I don't do it, then here's the repercussion of this.
Okay.
I can get sent off to a new unit and I don't know, that could be Korea.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Wow. Do you remember the first time you had the AMU jersey on?
Mm-hmm.
And you lost.
Yep.
What was that like?
It's kind of, it was frustrating because I'm representing, obviously the AMU now, then before us is a very big organization.
Was it your first match you had your jersey on, or did you win your first match you had the jersey on?
I didn't win for almost a year, 2 years.
No kidding.
Yeah. It was a couple of years.
So when you go back to the unit, are they trying to help you analyze?
Yes.
Why you lost?
Yep.
So you're not going back doing push-ups and running laps. You're not running miles or anything.
The situation that they had, or the idea that they had, was we all had gates we had to meet.
Okay.
So you get hired on, you know, you have to shoot, we'll say 85%.
Okay.
Well, then after you do that for a handful of matches, and that becomes like an average, then they up your gate to 90%.
Okay.
And then 93%, 95%.
I did not know that. Thanks for sharing that with me.
So you have to meet those gates.
Okay.
Now, if you get to a point where you're not meeting your gates, then you get put on remedial training.
Uh-huh.
And somebody, Dan, Travis, back then, my platoon sergeant was Sergeant Hampton, they would develop some sort of remedial training for you that you had to do all the time regardless.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as you're meeting your gates, then they would still push you for more. And then when you won, the winning was obviously the goal.
Yes.
Now, if you were there for 3, 4, 5 years and you didn't win, then maybe a new job was in order.
Yes.
But in the very initial, like, hey, I just got to the team, it wasn't the expectation of if you lose tomorrow, you're done.
Right.
So I met my gates. And like I said, Dan helped me a lot in as far as growing. And then, I mean, I was there for, I think, two years before I won Open Nationals.
Wow.
So that helped a lot. And then from there, it was very fast growth from there.
Right. Well, that's amazing. Thanks for sharing that story. Let's take one more break and let's get into how Glock found you. And there's so much more to talk about.
There's a lot.
Let's take a quick break. This week's podcast is also sponsored by Make Ready Nutrition. They have three products available for shooters that are 2-Alpha Performance to drink before hammer down, 2-Alpha Recovery that I use personally as a meal replacement for lunch with 34 grams of protein and is low carb, 2-Alpha Ammunition, which is next level hydration plus energy and amino acids for shooters, gym workouts, or pushing your body in sports and recreation. Whether you're in the Texas heat or in Arizona desert, 2-Alpha Ammunition works harder and endures longer. This unique formula is manufactured for shooters by shooters to replenish your body with electrolytes and hydration while helping aid in muscle recovery and providing fast energy. For 25% off your next order, go to makereadynutrition.com/discount/huntershd or enter huntershd at checkout for 25% off your entire order. makereadynutrition.com. Are you ready?
So you're doing wonderful in the AMU. You're making new friends. You're making a new family. You're just pressing on. And then it's time to leave. What does that look like?
So I actually met Glock, a gentleman named Ed Fitzgerald. You know Ed.
I know Ed very well.
So I met Ed in 2012.
I hope he's doing well. His health has been crazy and everything else and his wife. And I love him to death. I just... quick message and say a quick prayer for Ed and his family.
So love Ed.
I love Ed.
Ed will always have a special place in my heart.
Of course.
So 2012, right after I won Open Nationals, met Ed Fitzgerald.
Okay.
And he had mentioned then about me joining Team Glock.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we kept in touch and, you know, he presented it back then to the organization. No budget room. So sorry, we can't do it this year. Maybe next year we'll try again. Mm-hmm. So for the next couple of years, that's kind of what we did. We would stay in contact. We'd link up every once in a while and he'd repitch the idea. Can't add it to the budget. Sorry, man. Try again next year. So then 2014 comes around, World Shoots, you know, in Florida and the position became available. And I knew Ed was at World Shoot. I was at World Shoot. And as soon as I heard, you know, heard the news that the position is available, Ed was the first dude I called. Wow. And, you know, we set up a mock interview in his hotel room. And basically from there, he was like, I'm going to take this back. I can't promise you anything. Submit me your resume and we'll see what happens. So
you were finished with AMU?
No, I was still in the AMU at this point.
Continue. I just trying to make sure everybody has the same picture I have.
Continue. Yep. So this is for reference. This is at this point, October of 2014. I was scheduled to actually get out of the Army October of 2015 was my like full on ETS date.
Okay.
So I was at that verge, that like shift or like verge of, do I reenlist or do I get out? Because after a certain point, they won't let you reenlist anymore. So I've got to make a decision by, I forget what the date was, but it's kind of where I was at.
Okay.
So then Ed goes, talks back to the organization. They decide they want to bring me out to SHOT Show for interviews. So go to SHOT Show, met with Vice President, who's my current boss, interviewed with him, sat down with our executive team from Austria, interviewed with them, and then didn't hear anything for weeks.
Wow.
Thought I'd blown the interview. I got tuned up pretty good with our executive team, which was fine. I mean, they asked all the right questions and I was a very young kid.
Did you have other people you were talking to at the time?
No. Glock was where I wanted to be.
This was it.
Wow. Yep. Glock is where I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. It's like, they're the end game for me.
Okay.
Now it's my family. But.
Well, I didn't know because, you know, we know other people that you shot with have gone to other manufacturers.
Yeah.
And that's why I asked that question.
Yeah. No, so. I'm here.
Okay.
This is my home.
Well, I'm talking about then when you interviewed.
Oh.
You know, I'm talking about when you were going through that interview process.
at that initial point before you hired on with the Glock, did you have any, was that still like your main goal?
Yes.
Was Glock? That's cool.
They say don't put all your eggs in one basket, and I put all my eggs in one basket.
You haven't listened to your parents for a long time, so I'll start now.
Yep. Glock is where I want it to be.
Right.
So then, you know, I get back and don't hear anything for a few weeks, and it was Ed messing with me. They had already said yes, and Ed didn't tell me for a couple of weeks to make me sweat.
Checking your mental game?
Yeah.
What's he doing?
So he finally sends me the contract and the official job offer, and I'm over the moon, you know. So then I go back to work.
What'd your dad think?
He was very excited.
Mom?
Yeah, very excited.
Wow.
Because I had always talked about, you know, I want to go to the AMU, and then I want to leave that and pursue a separate path inside of the industry.
Okay.
And then when I met Ed back in 2012, I knew then that Glock is where I wanted to be. I love the organization. I love what Ed did. I loved what Glock was doing at all the events. Mm-hmm. I loved the team. And I knew then from that moment that that's where I want to be. I want to end up at Glock.
Wow.
And so then I go back to the AMU, tell them, you know, I just got the job offer from Glock. I am going to get out. I want to, you know, submit my paperwork to ETS.
What'd they say?
We're not happy.
You were winning.
I was winning. They weren't happy about it.
Oh, wow. Hard conversations.
Very hard. And it was actually a lot of drama.
Really?
It was. So what had happened was, so when I got the, right before I got the job offer, actually, when I got the job offer, I told Glock, I can't get out until October.
Okay.
Because that's 10 months that they have to wait.
Wow.
Well, then Glock came back and said, well, we understand, but we don't know if we can wait that long. That's 10 months of us not having a team captain, of this position not being filled.
So they were hiring you for a team captain right off the ground.
Yes.
Continue.
And they told me, you know, we don't know if we can wait that long. So I'm now sweating bullets. I'm trying to get Ed on the phone. Is there anything we can do? And the next day, it was almost like the good Lord planned all this for me.
Yeah.
But the next day, the Army had sent out a memorandum of a new policy that they had just put in place, that if you had a current job offer making more than your current rank and grade, you could get out 120 days early, which would put my actual ETS date to June.
Right.
And with terminal leave, which I accrued, I think 50 or 60 days up to that point, I could be out like end of March, right around April. So I was like, this is incredible. Like, this is like meant for me. And all I needed was commander signature. So I called Glock back and I'm like, hey, this new policy just hit the ground today. S1 just emailed it to me. I can be out by April. And they're like,
but I need you to adjust my contract and my salary being a little bit higher. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
So they're like, okay, perfect. You get your commander signature and you're in.
So you're going in your commander's office thinking everything's going to be willy-dilly. This is great. And I can see the look on your face.
Did not go that way.
Oh.
So I talked to my platoon sergeant. I had already printed the paperwork off. I had signed it. I had the job offer printed out. I had my packet prepared. Take it to him. And he's like, okay, I understand. I don't agree with it, but I understand. So he takes it to the commander, and the commander says, no, I'm not signing this. He's going to stay here until he's going to shoot nationals in October for us, and then he can get out. So that night, I got a call from our platoon sergeant, and he tells me that. And I got very, very upset. And I told him on the phone, if that's what the commander says, then you can fire me on the spot right now, because I will never shoot another round on that range.
In the military, and you do something like that, that don't sound like it's going to end up very well.
No,
being
they could
outspoken,
have
spoken, right?
They could have. I mean, that could have gone very poorly for me.
Yeah, that's pretty bold. You were very passionate.
Well, in my eyes, in the moment, and I'm a passionate person anyway.
And also knucklehead.
Yep.
But very much knucklehead. Not my words,
well,
your words.
Every aim, the old aim, you guys will tell you I was still a knucklehead.
Okay, fair enough.
But that to me was messing with the future of my career for some personal or selfish gain. So now you're taking a future, you know, career opportunity away from me because you want me to shoot a national championship for the AMU, which I understand, but this is also my career that you're potentially not destroying, but you're taking something away from me.
Did the platoon sergeant said, I need you to really think about this statement before I go any further? What was this like?
He told me to come back in the morning and we'll talk about it then.
Okay.
And I told him the same thing the next morning. I'd slept on it and I was like, look, I'm serious. If that's the route he wants to take, then I will not shoot another round out here. I'm done. You can send me wherever you want to send me. I'm done. I will not shoot here. I will not shoot nationals for you. I will not do it.
Wow. I don't know what that, I don't know what the next question should be out of my mouth. What, besides your, what happened besides I hear your Glock, but how did this go for the next?
I got the paperwork signed.
Okay.
And then I was removed from the team. And I got sent to
Like within a week or two, or like
within a week, I was off the action team. I got sent to.
Do you think that message verbatim got relayed, or you think, or
yes?
Okay.
Yes, he did. We didn't get along. He didn't like me anyway. And I know the platoon sergeant told him what I'd said. So it was an opportunity for him just to mess with me.
I'm like my anxious right now.
Yeah, I mean it was what it was. I became a PAO afterwards. I worked with our PAO.
Okay, what is that? Because I don't
the know. Public affairs office.
Okay.
So he was like our media relations photographer.
Yeah.
So basically all I did was he gave me a camera and I went back out to action shooting and I took pictures of them all day.
Okay.
So I just hung out with the same guys that I got removed from.
Did you learn some good photography skills?
No.
Okay. I'm just curious.
I barely even took pictures. I goofed off so much with them.
Man.
But yeah, it was.
Yeah, so it's drama. Yeah, it was kind of intense.
It was. And me being removed from the team the last three, 4 months I was there was just I think a power move from him.
Because you could have worked longer.
Yeah. I mean, I could have kept shooting for him.
Shut it down, gave you a camera.
Yeah. And we had new people coming in. So I could have, I could have helped train them, could have helped them, get accustomed to operations were.
They blocked you out completely.
Yeah.
Oh. But behind, seeing the big picture, you just didn't care. But it had to be a kind of a mental thing of wanting to be part of that team again to help because you were with them for so long.
Of course. I mean, I was upset and disappointed, but I mean, that was like you said earlier, that was a family that, we had,
yes.
Family relationship that we had built over the years.
Mm-hmm. How'd the teammates feel?
Upset too.
They were upset.
Yeah.
Mad at the commanding officer or mad at you? Or a little both?
More of just the decisions that were made.
Okay. How it was handled.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I love the AMU. I love the guys that are there now. Still love the organization.
Yeah.
It was a situation that was unfortunate for, I guess, everybody, but it's part of the story,
It is part of your story, but and it worked. So congratulations. When you leave the military and you go to Glock, I'm assuming that you're going to the home office in Georgia.
Yep.
First person there to meet you, Ed?
Yes, actually. Ed, he got me set up with jerseys, did photo shoot, got my work computer, got me set up.
Who was else on the team? Who was on the team then?
Back then it was Tori and Michelle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good deal. And being hired in as a captain when there's already people there, you already knew Tori and Michelle from shooting?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it was pretty easy transition there?
Yeah, it was. We'd all known each other from shooting for a handful of years. So me coming in was just now like traveling with them and shooting with them more versus just seeing them at the range for different competitions. And it was a lot of just me figuring out like how do we operate?
Mm-hmm.
Team objectives, training, what events does Glock expect us to be at?
Right.
What other responsibilities do we have? And just kind of figuring out the flow of how Team Glock operates and how the organization operates, how Team Glock operates inside of the organization. Just trying to be a sponge and learn as much as I could,
right,
as quick as I could.
Yeah, because I'm sure they're moving quickly because I guess you had nationals coming up.
Yeah, yeah, sure did.
Because you were going to be shooting for nationals for somebody.
Sure did.
It wasn't going to be AMU.
Yep.
I forgot to ask a question. I hear people that talk about people at AMU having just an unlimited supply of bullets to shoot.
Not true.
Okay. That's why I asked the question. That's why I asked the question, because our taxpayers have to pay something. So we didn't know if it was buying bullets. So it's not an unlimited amount of bullets.
No.
There's a budget that's in there and everything.
Yes, there is. And the AMU is, like I said, I still, regardless of what happened with that situation, I still love the organization.
We're leaving it positive. I just want to ask about the bullets.
No, it's not. We had our budgeted allotment or our allotment of ammo.
Yeah.
And we had to make that last for however long the contract ran.
Okay. When you got the Glock, was there an unlimited ammo?
Mm-hmm.
No. Okay.
Still not. Got a budget I got to submit every year.
That's awesome.
Still not. But
get all the rumors out of the way right now.
I don't shoot as much as people would think.
Right. Well, you're at Glock. You're doing, nationals that you're shooting.
Production.
Production.
Yep.
So you went from shooting, I take it, did you switch over to production in AMU or you stay open to production?
Open to production.
Okay.
Huge transition. Huge transition.
You've got a Glock jersey on for the first time at Nationals. You already went through a full year before you started winning with an open gun.
Yep.
You go to Nationals in 2014 with a production gun.
Yep.
And finish.
Not good.
Not good.
Not good.
And Ed and everybody's like, okay, this is not what we signed up for.
Yep.
As a captain, you have to tell me the emotions have to be just all over the place.
Oh, terrified. I was terrified for the first year and a half at Glock. I was, I would say when I first got hired, obviously I was extremely happy. I loved the organization. This was like my dream. And then when I got there and changing platforms, learning the gun, learning the organization, stepping into a completely new world. Mm-hmm. And I say new world because, you know, in the Army, when I was with AMU, if, say, for whatever reason, I had gotten fired from there, I'd been removed from the unit or whatever, I've still got a job. I just get sent to a new unit, wherever that may be.
Yes.
But I'm still getting a paycheck every 2 weeks.
Right.
Now I'm in a position where if this doesn't work out and I get fired, I no longer have a job. Mm-hmm. I am now jobless and I have to go find a new job.
Yes.
So now to me,
you got new pressures.
Yes. The stakes felt a lot higher to perform.
Wow.
And for the first year and a half, 2 years, I mean, I was really trying to transition into the platform, learn the platform, how the gun shoots, trigger control, recoil management, tracking the sights, because I went from open to irons, stage strategies. How do I fit into all of this? And then trying to navigate the organization side of still working a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of times where I wondered if I made the right decision.
No, really?
Just because I was, I don't know if scared is the right word, but I was very nervous and anxious that it wasn't going to go the way I thought it would.
I've had lots of conversations with Ed when I met him early on and we'd sit down and have some good conversations. He seems like he would be one hell of a mentor.
He was.
To calm you down.
Yes.
Because he's calmed me down.
Yes.
On some excited things I've been about certain situations in the industry and how things are working and how do I get in here and make a difference.
Right.
And Ed's had some valuable conversations with me to get me on par.
Well, me and Ed.
I can relate that.
No, back then, me and Ed had many, many a conversations until, you know, the sun was down. We're the last two people left in the parking lot, just hanging out by the bed of the truck talking and trying to figure out, you know, how does all of this work?
Well, let me throw something out there that's funny, but always talked about. Were you low and left?
No, I was all over the place.
Okay. So that's a myth too.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. And I only bring that up because you hear people talking about, I'm sure you've seen all the forms and everything. And all the fun with that, but there's a way to work through that with training. Yeah. You know, so I just had to get that out there because it just, that's how my podcast works. When it comes to my mind, there's no script.
I hear you.
So, you know, your production, you're having, you know, hard times trying to figure out a new platform. You're also, I'm sure, breaking that gun apart 16 ways to Sunday and putting it back together to figure out what's happening here, what's happening there. Why is it doing this? Why is it doing that? So how many times over are you an armor?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. So you've been you've got more than one certificate.
Yeah. Now it's, and really then it was I wanted to understand everything about the gun, how it operates, you know, the purpose behind every part, piece, the way it's put together. I wanted to know all of it.
Right.
So that I could not only understand the operation of the pistol itself, but if something happens, you know, mechanically, jam, malfunction, whatever, God forbid, then I can diagnose it immediately and I can fix it.
Right.
But I can also feel like I can train better on a platform that I fully understand.
Okay.
And that was the position that I wanted to put myself in.
All right. Well, you're a team captain and you've got the Glock shirt on. Mm-hmm. You go to matches. There's a lot of people shooting Glocks and matches. And they may have a problem they can't fix. Did Ed shield that from you?
No.
Or is that your responsibility?
That was my responsibility. And I've actually got a funny story about that.
Oh, please.
So I'd been on the team for, I think, a week. And I got sent up to Pennsylvania for a steel challenge match.
I love where this is going. In Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
I've been to some matches up there. Continue.
Oh, man. So, again, mind you, I'm on the team for maybe a week. Get sent up there. I'm competing.
and a brand new pretty jersey on.
Yep.
No sweat stains
and this
yet.
Young junior shooter comes up to me.
Oh no.
And she's holding a part. And I forget what part it was now. I remember which one it was now, but she's holding a part. And it was broken. I knew it was broken. And she's walking up and showing it to me. And I'm like, please, Lord, don't ask her or don't ask me to fix this because I don't know how to fix this yet. Yeah. And I was so scared that that's what the question was going to be.
Yeah.
Fortunately, she was just showing me that she had broken it and that they had replaced it.
Yeah.
And we talked for a few minutes and went on about our matches.
Took a picture.
I got home. I think I got back Sunday.
Yeah.
Monday morning, I was in one of, he works in testing. I was in his office and I was like, I want the immediate crash course of everything.
That scared the hell out of you.
Oh, yeah. I want
to
know everything.
So you're at a point now, if somebody walks up to me, especially a younger junior shooter, you don't want to let them down.
The optics of that are insane.
Yeah.
That can, whether I've been there for 2 days or 10 years.
Nobody likes to say, I don't know.
No, especially me. I hate, well, I don't know.
Millennials don't like none of that. And I hope I offend every one of you. I'm just kidding. I work with a bunch of them. But yeah, it's hard to say, I don't know.
Yep. I wanted the crash course. I wanted to know everything.
Yeah. And that took you from the military, having all your experience of having crash courses before. How long did you spend with you?
We sat in a conference room for 4 or 5 hours through
hardcore.
Yeah. Back then it was just Gen 3, Gen 4s. So we went through each model, mm-hmm. went through Gen 3 differences between Gen 3, Gen 4.
Yeah.
And he basically just showed me everything and we diagnosed. He brought, you know, a lot of his notes on things he's seen, mm-hmm. and we diagnosed a lot of problems. You know, X happens, Y could be causation.
Right.
Here's how you fix it. Or if this happens, this is probably the reason. Here's how you fix it. Mm-hmm. We just went through a lot of stuff.
Wow.
And that really helped me as far as a lot of understanding, but also making sure that I was never in a position like that again.
Wow. Wow. Now, take me back to the first time you're at Glock.
Mm-hmm.
Ed walks into your office. Sure, it would be Ed, and goes, hey, we need to book a flight. We're going to Austria to meet Mr. Glock.
Yep, that was, I'm trying to think when my first trip was there. Maybe February of 2016.
Okay.
We would usually go twice a year.
Okay. Had you met him before you went to Austria?
No.
Okay, get that. I was hoping that was going to be the answer.
No,
so take me through your emotions.
Very, very nervous.
Yeah.
So I think, I feel like it was like February of 2016, the mm-hmm. first time we went over there. So we get there and, you know, we're having dinner. We get told that we're going up to see Mr. Glock and I bet my heart rate's 150, 160 beats per minute, just like sweating bullets. I've got a suit on. And I didn't know how it was going to go. I don't know what to expect. I mean, it's Mr. Glock.
Yes. Yeah, that's why I'm asking the questions. I've never met him.
He is Mr. Glock, you know? And so we get in there, and I met his wife, Mrs. Glock.
I heard she's nice.
She's awesome.
Very outgoing. Yes. Very, very personable.
Yes. Very welcoming. She made the whole experience amazing.
Continue.
So we sit down with Mr. Glock and, you know, we're kind of talking small talk. He's talking to Michelle. He knew Michelle and Tori.
Okay.
There's a bunch of other people around the table and we're all kind of talking. And then we start showing shooting videos. He always enjoys seeing shooting videos.
Mm-hmm. Were you winning yet?
No.
Continue.
No. No. So yeah, I just showed him some videos. And I think at that point I'd been worked an event with Ed and I'd thrown a clay up and then drew my pistol and shot the clay out of the air. And that was like my cool trick shot.
It's only happened one time and you caught it on video.
Yes. Luckily Ed was there filming. So I was showing him some videos. I'm like, it dawned on me. I have this awesome trick shot.
Yeah.
I have to show this to him. Oh. This could be like my, you know, my secret move. So I pull it up and I show it to him. And I was explaining, you know, I had a clay pigeon that you shoot with a shotgun. Mm-hmm. I threw it up and drew my pistol and shot it out of the air.
Yeah.
And I zoomed in on the clay where, you know, you could see the clay explode and loved it. Oh. Loved it. So then I have to show everybody at the table this video. And now whenever we're around each other again, he always asks me to pull that video up.
So not go out back and let's do it.
No, I don't know if I could ever reproduce that.
That's why I asked
it
the question.
It was such a once, like an awesome moment.
Because me as a business owner, I'd be like going, I got a range out in the backyard. Let's go do that. That'd be fun to watch.
I could do it again, but that was like a one,
No, that's so cool. It was the reload for Travis Tomasi. It was your video.
Yes, it was. It was. So if, like I said, now whenever we're around each other, which I mean, it's since COVID hasn't been in a few years.
Yeah, and that's what you're getting in kind of the time frame when we met. You said 16 and 17, and then actually started. I think I met you in 18.
Yep,
and you were wearing other sunglasses then, which was great. And we were always nice. We're always polite. We always had. I don't care, you know, what you wear. Just have fun. When it's time, it's time. I told you the same thing.
Yep.
And now you wear 100 Zs, you go, which is cool. But where I'm going with that is a lot of things have happened. Especially over the past, you know, I remember I told you I was real close to Ed.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Ed calling me saying, "Brian, I'm getting ready to do a different role." I'm like going, "Oh, what?" And he goes, "Well, you know, Shane's fixing to take over everything I was doing." What'd that promotion look like when they came to you about that? Because I was made aware of that when it happened too, because Ed called me and let me know that you're getting ready to step up in some big boy roles.
Well,
were you ready for that?
I was.
Okay.
I was. It was something that, you know, him and I had talked about, and Ed was busy in his own regard. He had a lot of things on his plate.
Yep.
And it was also a route that I wanted to take.
Wonderful.
I wanted not like a control thing. I just wanted.
Oh, that's a control thing.
I wanted.
It was some of that.
It was like a leadership position that I wanted.
It's your next level. It's your next step.
Yeah. And yes. I wanted to, I could take care of the team. I could be a leader. I could take care of them. I could offer them whatever they needed to be successful. I could give them all the tools that they needed.
Right.
And it would come directly from me. I wouldn't have to go through different levels of leadership to finally get something done.
Yep.
Where, you know, I was not given full autonomy, but I was given trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what the team needs. I know how the team's going to benefit the organization. So I will do everything I can to make sure the organization is protected, the team is protected, mm-hmm. and we're all doing our jobs, and the team will have the tools that they need to be successful. And we're going to do everything we can to support the organization.
Right.
And that was what I wanted. And now it's grown. I've more responsibility, more and more.
Right.
And it's just evolved into, a lot.
Right.
And, you know, my end game, like I've said, is to be at Glock. That is where I want to be. It's where I want to stay. It's where I want to retire from. I love the place. I love the organization, love the people.
Right. How old are you now?
32.
Oh, we got a long way to go.
Well, I'm retiring at 40.
Oh.
That's always my saying.
Somebody's got a serious crypto plan.
I'm sticking to it for now.
40?
40.
8 more years.
I know. It's not going to happen, but I'm
going
to stick to it.
Okay, because I'm like going, you know, everybody has that thought process. I even thought that myself, and then I didn't have a weekend off until I was 40. I've told that story before, and then now I'm out every weekend now building a brand for me and Sherry in the lab, so I'm going to throw that plan out the window.
Yep. So it's a joke, but I know that shooting is not going to last forever. Shooting is a shelf life, as much as I love it and as much as I hate to admit it.
Right.
It is a shelf life.
But retiring from shooting or retiring from Glock at 40?
I want to be done altogether. At 40 years old, I want to have 40 acres of land in Montana in a log cabin. And
well, as of this podcast being dropped, I got 280 acres for sale right now in Alabama. It's just not in Montana. But anyway, no, because I was reading, you know, yes, you do expire. That's a harsh word, but you do get to a shooting point where you're not at that level. And there's other categories to go in, but it's not the same because you love being on the super squad. You mm-hmm. love being part of that competition of aggression.
Yep.
Because I remember the first, you know, well, I'm going all over the place again, but I'm going to go back to my point. So you could retire from a shooter and still be like Ed and then oversee things until somebody else is ready. That's part of the plan?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, when I first got into the organization or joined Team Glock, I told them that I'd never want to just be a shooter. I want to offer more, and whatever
that's the key, right?
Whatever
there.
More is,
yes.
That's what we're going to figure out. But I never want to be just a guy that pulls the trigger.
Okay.
So as years have gone by, I have involved myself with more and more.
Oh, budgeting. I'm sure there's so much more.
There's a lot of
so much more you have to answer to now.
Yes. Because, and it takes up a lot of my time, but I love it. And like I said, the shooting is going to be, it's a shelf life. I'm going to have to not have to, but I also, mm-hmm. It's going to come to a point where I'm not as competitive and I want to retire on my terms and not kind of just be like, you get to a point where you just realize you can't win anymore.
Right.
And I want to go out on my own terms.
Okay.
And when I do decide to be done, I decide to hang up, you know, hang up my belt, hang up my cleats, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I want to have a position inside the organization where, you know, I'm still supporting the team, but still also supporting the organization. Right. And I want to create that, build that.
That's very cool. You've gotten married recently.
I did. I did.
Just another step of, you're by yourself for a long time.
I was.
How does, you know, is it's one of those things, you know, was it an easy transition to have somebody in the house every day?
But yes, it, good. It honestly was.
Good.
And
good
I've,
for you.
We got married in October of last year.
Yes.
And I have loved every minute of it.
That's amazing.
My wife's my best friend. Right. I love her to death.
Right.
I hope she comes to more matches with me because I'd love for her to be more involved with the community and meet, you know, meet all my friends out here at the range.
What does she do?
She's a chiropractor.
Okay, good.
And I do not get adjustments.
Huh?
I don't get adjustments.
Well, I was fixing to go into my next question, but all right, then.
That's what everyone says. Oh, man, you get all the adjustments in the world. No,
exactly.
I don't.
That's another myth.
Yep, another myth.
All the low and left, everything's a myth.
That's right. That's right.
That's so funny.
But yeah.
That's so cool.
Her and I getting into, I mean, we just bought our first house together.
Yeah.
We closed on it last month.
Congratulations.
So it's
been
a nightmare.
But yes, because nightmare is right, because now you got to be an adult.
Yeah. I got to learn how to like do plumbing stuff. Yeah,
exactly. And I used to call a guy to get the landlord to fix his stuff. Now it's your responsibility. No.
Well, she at times is, well, let's call somebody to fix this.
Yes.
And then I'm like, no, I know how much this is going to cost.
Right.
I'll figure it out.
Right.
I can break it three times. It'd still be cheaper than paying somebody. But that's neither here nor there.
Well, it's still how you grew up being your own guy.
Yes. And my dad was very handy. And he always, he never contracted things out. He always knew a guy.
Yeah.
Just one of those like handy guys that could fix everything.
Right.
And I was always around that stuff. So I feel like I'm pretty handy. I can figure stuff out pretty quick. But yeah, now, I mean, the transition from, you know, from us going independent to together living in a house.
Right.
It's been very easy. It's been fun.
So cool.
You know, we're kind of.
Best friend and everything's just working out great. That's
it is.
Cool.
It is. And we've lived together for a couple of years before this.
Right.
So
that's smart.
Now it's just
people
like,
don't like doing that, but it's the smartest thing to do. You got to figure out what you're going to compromise on.
Yes. Yeah. And it's cool to watch, you know, her vision of what once she wants the house.
Once you're committed, you're committed.
Right. Right. 100%. And, you know, like I said, it's cool to see her vision of the house come to fruition. It's cool to see my vision of the house come to fruition and then where those visions meet.
Did you build from the ground up or buy?
We bought.
Okay.
We bought. It's older. It's I think it was built in 94, but it's got beautiful bones.
I hear there's a lot of divorces after people build houses. That's why I asked that question.
Well, we started. Our first house was a build. And it was a chaos.
Yeah, we decided to keep the marriage and not the house.
Yeah. We dumped that contract. It was so much anger.
And that is not a myth. That is very true.
That is very true. So much anger.
Wow. You know, you're out here today at Nationals. I watched you shoot a couple of stages yesterday, and we had talked a week prior because I was going to talk about it on my weekly show because you just got through taking a gash, not a scratch, not a puncture wound, a square piece of skin out of your leg.
Yep.
And you're out here, and I heard somebody ask you earlier, how are you feeling? And it hurts constantly.
Yep.
And I heard somebody else say it just hurts when he stands still.
Yep.
How, you know, you don't have to be here based on that injury. You know, Glock understands. Everybody understands. Why are you still here with that kind of injury? I mean, that's, your doctor even told you this can take 3 months to heal.
Mm-hmm.
But your mind says, screw that.
I don't have it in me.
Okay.
I don't have it in me.
I love it. I'm just, you know, wow.
I'm a competitor at heart. I live, breathe, and die by competition. I've just always been that way. I'm driven, motivated, and every catchword you can use for it. I just want to compete. And there's no way I can not come out here and sit back and say, I could have.
Okay.
Yes, it hurts. It 100% hurts. I can't move like I know I should be moving.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
but
yes.
I'm here and I'm competing. And to me, that's important.
Yeah. 40. So go back to that number again. There's Olympians, there's major professional people out there that when they're done competing, they don't have that drive and they have other issues in their life that happen because of it. What's your plan when you don't compete anymore to overcome that? Because you said it yourself. I've always competed my entire life. That's all I know. What's your plan?
Everything's a competition, though. It doesn't just have to be here on the range in a sport.
Okay.
Everything is a competition. I can be the best at whatever I'm doing.
I agree with that.
I can be the best at showing up on time.
Yep.
I can be the best at, I don't know, turning in reports on time or doing the best report. I mean, there's the competition for me. It doesn't just have to be here where I'm winning a trophy or winning a championship. I can still be a competitive worker, competitive employee.
I'm so glad you said that.
And that's just me. That's I love it. The kind of person I am.
If you followed my career with Hunters HDG over the past 5 years, that's me.
Yep.
I love that because I want to be the best eyewear provider out here. Well, that we got that established in my mind. I'm going to win. I want competition to come to the shooting sports.
Yep.
And I wanted to be the best vendor. I get it. I can totally relate with that. That's so cool.
Whenever that day is, I will 100% miss it. Mm-hmm. And I will dream about it. I will think about it. I will miss it. There will be plenty of days.
They made a category for you. Super duper senior just got it brought out. You know, we've got a category.
Maybe
for
I'll come out of retirement.
Okay.
But yes, I'm going to miss it.
You got to get a revolver with somebody. Not even ever happen.
Nah, that doesn't interest me. But yeah, I'm 100% going to miss it. Okay. And I'm not going to say that I will, like, when I retire, like, I'm done. I'll never be at another match.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that, like, the rest of my life has to suffer.
Yeah.
I can still compete. I can still be successful. I can still be driven. I can be motivated. Like I said, I can be the best dude every day at showing up on time.
Yeah. Do you see the Glock team ever being more than three people?
Of course. There's always opportunity for growth.
I didn't know. Because, you know, we always usually hear there's always been three that I know about since I've been around. I didn't know if there'd ever be more than three. That's why I asked that question.
There's always been three, but yeah, there's always opportunity for growth.
It's just a budgeting issue thing? Like it was before they got you?
Well, it's more of a, where do we use them and what is our objective?
What do they bring to the table besides shooting?
Well, just what are our objectives with them? How are we going to, you know, what's our plan? What's our mission? What's the objective?
Okay.
What are we accomplishing with it? So there's always opportunity. We just have to navigate it.
When you're looking for shooters and, you know, I tell people this all the time, you're always being watched. You know, you're always, you know, do you look at shooters directly? Do you listen to other people's feedback from shooters? How do you get information on shooters yourself?
I listen to everything.
Okay.
Because you hear, you know, obviously seeing them, talking to them, you get, I guess you could say one facade, and then you listen to other people talk about them. It could be something completely different. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone has a face or an image that they put up to impress certain people. And then that comes down when they're around other people that maybe they're more comfortable with.
Right.
So I sit back and listen to everybody. Everyone's got an opinion and maybe all of them are right.
Right.
And I don't say that as a negative thing.
No. Yeah.
You really get to know people that way.
Yeah. Cause you're putting your name on the line now.
In a way,
because your judgment calls are what makes the decisions for the future of the team.
Right.
That's a big responsibility.
Yeah, it is. I think I just like to listen to people. And like I said, you know, the beginning of this, when we were talking, I like to be reserved and listen because I feel like I get to know people more.
Right.
Especially when they get comfortable and they want to talk more. You know, I get to learn different things, I get to learn how they think, what their mentality is, the kind of people they want to be around, the kind of people that they associate themselves with, their interests, what they like to do outside of shooting sports.
Right.
I just get to know people and all of that makes a difference. You know, can they integrate well with the team? Can they integrate with the organization? Do they complement? Do we all complement each other? Is that a path we want to pursue? So I get to learn all these things. So yeah, I mean, I take information from everybody. And like I said, everyone's opinion could be right.
Right. That's so cool. Well, man, thank you so much for sitting down with me today. Is there anything we've left off about what your next plans are with Glock? I think we talked about a lot. Is there anything else you want to discuss?
I think we talked about a whole lot.
Man, I'm excited.
Me too.
I tell people all the time, everybody's got a lot of differences and not everybody really knows everybody. And when you can really understand where people come from, then you understand more of how we all get along based on the Second Amendment and everything else. We all come together for the same thing. So one more question. Do you ever see yourself being a major advocate for the Second Amendment, or are you just kind of doing your ground, what you're doing through Glock, and that's where you're at right now?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, good.
You know, that's obviously in the realm world we live in now. Yes.
We're attacked every day.
Yes, the political atmosphere is definitely changing a lot. So I feel like we need a lot of advocacy in that in that aspect.
Yes.
And we have the opportunity to, you know, be a part of that.
Well, there again, it goes back to what you're saying. Everybody's watching us. Yes. Just like you're watching other people. They're really watching us.
Yep.
Very cool. If anybody has any questions for you, how can they get in touch with you? You
know, Instagram, social media is the best way to get in contact with me.
Good deal.
My Instagram is at @Shane_Coley.
Yeah.
Send me DMs, comment on my posts.
All right.
I respond to all my messages or try my best to when I see them. So if there's ever questions or anything, advice, man, I'm always, like you said earlier, I try to give everyone open arms, open hand.
Very cool.
One thing I've always said is everyone deserves my best.
Right.
I hate to give people 50%.
Yeah.
Even when my energy may be at 50%, people to them, you know, it's an opportunity for them to learn or to meet, talk, whatever. Yeah. And I feel like they deserve my best. So,
well, I'm very proud of what you've done. I'm glad I got to know more about you today, and thank you for sharing everything with me. I'm sure the people listening are begging me to scream what's coming out next, but I asked Ed for 3 years what was coming out next. They're all tight-lipped. They don't tell you nothing.
So
I'm not even going to ask the question.
Well, I would give you the same answer.
I know, because you were trained by Ed, which is a personal and dear friend to both of us. And there again, listen to this. Make sure you keep Ed and his family in your thoughts, because I love that man dearly. But legs healing up, everything's good on the right side. Or have you screwed it up all over this weekend?
I screwed it up more this weekend, but that's all right. It's not going to be permanent damage. It'll be a little bit of pain for now, but you know what? I'm out here. I'm getting to compete, and I'm having a blast.
Did you get back to the hotel and was there blood?
Oh yeah.
Oh damn. I'm
sorry. Yeah, I bled through the bandages yesterday.
But God bless you, brother. That's competition to the next level. I love it.
Well, like I said, I don't have that in me to
Glock's got good insurance. You'll be all right. They've got good benefits.
It'll be fine.
Nice.
I'm happy to be here.
Oh man, I'm happy that you're here too, and happy that we had this conversation. If you have any questions for Shane, he's told you how to get in touch with him. And of course, email me at info@huntershdgold.com. I'll make sure to get him myself. And until next time, thank you for watching or listening to this episode of Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens, and we'll see you at the range soon. Thanks, Shane.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
For a complete written transcript of the Dr. Bill Show, go online to www.icarusmusic.com.
And welcome back to the Dr. Bill Show. Let's go to a caller who seems to be having issues communicating with his girlfriend. Caller?
Yeah, I'd had this problem with my girlfriend. She kind of broke up with me. I've been doing everything right. Everything's been going great. We went out. We've gone out for, I don't know, I'd say a good 5-6 months. Everything's good. I mean...
But son, you've got to use communication.
I've done that. I mean, what else can I do? I mean, seriously, I mean, like...
Son. Some girls are just bitches.